Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. Today, I'm joined by Dina Otero, who is the VP of Demand Gen. And let me tell you, I am pumped for this episode. As we were just talking right before, like Dina's got the scaled tech stack. And this has kind of become a resounding theme that I'm seeing with a lot of my friends is people got laid off. And then there was this tech stack that was in place, and then they hired new marketers to build a scrappy ABM program, but they already have all the right tools in place to build a scaled program. It's like, what do you do? So anyway, I'm excited to talk through how do you effectively orchestrate that kind of a program. So Dina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so we were just talking about this beforehand. Like, you've been at Mission Cloud for about 10 months, and when you were hired, you walked in and you're like, wow, I have like all of the tools. Like, I have a lot of the things that I could need. So I'm just curious, like, when you were hired, what was the main thing you were actually hired to accomplish?
To scale demand gen, really. Okay. But demand gen is a very broad term.
Yeah.
So it really ties into a lot of different areas between channel marketing and awareness and brand and content marketing and ABM, which is why we're here today. And for me, I don't know if this is going to be like a hot topic or not, but for me, I feel like ABM and demand gen are not two separate channels or two separate strategies. They are by far a parallel process that are using all of the same channels and activities, but just the execution is different based on what outcomes you're trying to get to. And that's why basically, the ABM component that I essentially implemented, it ties into the overall demand gen umbrella.
Yeah. And again, I love the call out that some people, this is controversial, but I just think ABM is like a very specific subset of demand generation. And I've actually said to a lot of people, like, your first ABM program could pretty easily be account-based promotion to demand generation programs. And like, you're just intentionally bringing specific accounts into existing programming. So yeah, fully on the same page on that front. What I'm curious about is if you were, again, brought in to specifically stand up and scale a demand gen program, again, you're about 10 months in. A lot of people, and I've talked with some people that are like 3 months or 3 years into their role, and they're like, yeah, we just finally like fully set up the full demand gen program with everything. We've got like 20 marketers. Everybody's doing their thing. We're now ready for ABM. So I'm curious for your context, like, why would you build an ABM program in the first like year if the goal was to scale demand gen?
Well, because like I said, they kind of have two different, the outcomes are a little bit different, but in reality, the activities are the same. So what you're trying to do with an ABM perspective is grow your pipeline, grow your revenue, have, run things more efficiently. And then anything that also helps from a sales cycle perspective, which, I mean, the research is all out there with an ABM when it's done correctly. Sales velocity is impacted. Sales cycle is impacted. Your closed rate goes up. Your sales cycle goes down. So all of those things have just a long-term effect. So in reality, you're taking your findings from your ABM and then implementing them into other areas of the business that can also have those same benefits.
Yeah. I love that framing of using ABM as a testing ground to validate ideas in a smaller subset of data to then take those results and implement them across the board in a larger demand gen program. I think that's a great call out. So again, you're standing up demand gen, you go to build an ABM program. I'm curious, as we talk about that smaller subset, like how did you find the audience that you wanted to build an ABM program around?
So a couple of different ways. So going back to the topic of scrappy ABM, we were very much a scrappy marketing team. You know, Mission Cloud's in a really unique position right now where we're growing at a really rapid pace, which is excellent. And that's what we want to see. And we want that growth to be continuous. But when I came on board, we were kind of in this like interim stage. We were, you know, the marketing team in particular was beyond that scrappy stage. They're trying to move up to the next level. And it's like, how do you then elevate all of marketing and all of the tech stack to help support what everyone's trying to accomplish at that level? And that's kind of where I came in. So I inherited this technology, this process, the team, and I was trying to, and I tried very hard to elevate everybody to get to that next part. And so the way we were finding accounts were, so we had, sorry, going back to my original comment, is I inherited technology and Sixth Sense was already in place. And so, but we didn't have the really big predictive model with all the bells and whistles and the profile fit and all of that at first. We just had the basic platform, which gives you the keyword intent data and basically like website activity. So it's helpful. I'm not making it seem like it's not important. It's super helpful, but I know that Sixth Sense is also super powerful when you implement the predictive portion. So basically what we did was, okay, this is what we have. So we need to basically use this information to fill in the gaps. We are a premier tier consulting partner of AWS. So we know what services AWS offers. We know what services Azure and Google offers that compete with AWS's offers. So we put all of those keywords into the tracking system. We started also adding all of the keywords that that we use for our own tracking purposes on our website, services, professional services and managed services that we offer. And we kind of use that as our starting point. And so even if people were not searching for AWS services, they may have been looking at the competitive keywords. And we started to basically map our accounts and our strategy through those respective keywords. Now, also, we have a phenomenal relationship with AWS. Again, it's the nature of our business. So we're also given more insight from them on which accounts are current customers and where they're what services they're currently using and where there's growth potential. So we were also able to use just intel that our sales team and our leaders just connects or pick up through relationships and networking.
Yeah. So again, it's this third-party intent tracking married up with, you can see the first-party engagement from an account perspective of those at your website. And then obviously AWS is sharing some information. I'm curious, is that through like a second-party data tool like a Crossbeam or a Reveal, or is that just more what I like to refer to as anecdata? It's like you're just hearing from like your partners, hey, these are the things that are happening.
Exactly. It's a second. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. And again, there's a lot of value in the anecdata that's like difficult to scale, but still at the end of the day, like if AWS is telling you these are current customers and they need help, that's probably the best data you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool. So again, that's how we find our audiences. And once we found the audience, I'm curious, like what were the channels that we tried to use to actually get in front of these people?
So that was the nice thing. Again, going back to my comment about demand gen and ABM being a blended execution strategy, I didn't have to create any new channel. I didn't have to create new activities. I didn't have to like recreate the wheel in any way. Everything was already in place because before I joined, the demand team was already running paid ads and the team was already writing really powerful content and blog posts and white papers and case studies. It was just taking all of these disparate pieces and combining them together to make a collection of information that's valuable and making sure that we're feeding it to the right audience at the right time. And I think that's the key point, is taking like all of that info and doing it at the like to the right audience at the right time. And that's what takes it from demand gen, lead gen, et cetera, to account-based. At the account-based approach.
So I'm curious in that context, and I love the call out of like, you don't actually maybe have to go create all that many new things. Like you may already have a lot of what you need today. a lot of what we're helping our clients is just like pure plate orchestration. Like, how do you pull all these different things together and say, like, this is your new program, like run with this. I'm curious, when you talk about then serving those things up, like specifically when we think about right channels and right content, and how do we marry like the channel that we're using to reach the audience in their current stage and what content best serves them? Like, how did you start to map some of those things out?
Yeah. So I think the biggest roadblock that we had was identifying the right contacts and then kind of the manual process of like putting those contacts into a list, identifying that, like mapping that list into our system. So then we can send them these emails out of HubSpot and then feed these accounts ads from LinkedIn or the Success Display Network. We even later on, this wasn't in the beginning, but later on, we even added the conversational email feature that Sixth Sense offers, which kind of helped with some automatic outreach when like certain triggers were happening. So that kind of, and it warmed people up a bit more before our Cloud Advisor team. Cloud Advisors is what we internally call our BDRs.
Nice.
So before they were like ready to speak to a BDR essentially. So we kind of use all these different areas to do the outreach. In addition to that, you know, there is like the broader outreach that was also happening through like organic social. And then we're also using our homepage and like HubSpot like integrations on our website to feed like custom pop-ups.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like, and I love, sorry, we're getting really nerdy for a moment, but like, I love.
No, that's okay.
Like HubSpot, it's one of the most, I think, not talked about functionalities of like how you can create dedicated tactics that are based on specific lists. And like, you can just create active lists that hit specific criteria. And then based on the list criteria that they're in, like they get a different pop-up, they get a different chatbot. Like there's a ton of things you can do in HubSpot just around like list segmentation that I think is super under talked about and underutilized. So again, it sounds like you had some really great filtering criteria around list segmentation between Sixth Sense and HubSpot and just your different tools that all talked well together that then based on where they were from a list perspective, which mapped up against their account progression, you then serve different tactics, different content assets and different through different channels.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I love it. The other thing that I'm always curious on is generally when somebody like takes inventory of the content that they have available for a program, they generally find some gaps. So I'm curious, as you were taking inventory of your content, like, were there any gaps that popped up where you're like, oh, we definitely need content that speaks to like this audience around this topic?
You know, I gotta say, I was really impressed with the amount of content that Mission Cloud had. Our product marketing team is just awesome. We also have a really strong partner marketing team who works with product marketing. So between the two, they're just really diligent about writing content. And quite frankly, they were very like proactive with optimizing like usage of like ChatGPT and now Claude and all these other AI writers to help fill in the blanks where it needed. Because the data was there. The information was somewhere within the organization. It just maybe was not formalized in a dedicated asset or something. So that even if something was missing, we were able to turn it around really quickly.
Okay.
Which is quite unique. I'm not gonna, I know that's not something, I think that's the first time I've ever said that we did not need more content ever.
Yeah. That's amazing. On that note, then, like as you were looking for content assets, were there specific content types or things that, again, as you were running through the checklist of the content assets that you needed, like what were those assets that you were looking for that you then found?
Yeah, sure. So I think there are areas that obviously content varies based on like the lifecycle stage or the buying stage of like where these companies might be in different areas. So when the early stage, like a more awareness stage accounts that are still kind of trying to get educated or understanding what it is you do, how, like they're not ready to talk to you. They're just kind of doing their research. We were putting a lot of information out on generative AI. It's one of our big services. Obviously AWS is very invested in generative AI. And so we realized that a lot of the stuff that we were doing was very high level generative AI, but it wasn't actionable. Like what can people actually do with it from our like point of view? So that was a gap that I guess once we started to like map out, and it's not so much that it was mapped out from a buying stage perspective, it was more mapped out from the maturity of this new topic and this new like area that has just grown substantially in the last like 2 years, that there was so much that was that people needed to understand, that that was a piece that we're like, okay, we really need to double down, triple down on the content and make a huge library from very, very basic to much more advanced, where people are technical and they want to know about the different like large language models and all, you know, the under the hood technicalities that unfortunately is beyond my knowledge. I'm still learning. But one thing that we realized quickly was sometimes when people are learning about a new topic and it's this like the art of the possible, meaning like anything can be possible with generative AI, it's such a big concept that you almost don't know how to think about it on a smaller scale. So you're like, where do I even start? What can I even do with this? And so we started creating content around different generative AI use cases, obviously as it applies to our ICP. So intelligent data processing, chatbots, use cases for call centers. I mean, there is all sorts of different use cases. I think right now we've documented 15 plus different unique use cases, and I'm sure we have a lot more in the works because we have a really large project list right now of all these generative AI customers. But it really helped frame the conversation of what is actually possible. And it made it super straightforward and tactical, where people can say, okay, now I can take this and apply it into my business today. And this is the problem it's going to solve. And this ties into this bigger company objective or business objective, versus this like, oh, you can just be more efficient with doing X, Y, and Z, where it's very like, okay, but can I really? Like, it's, you know, it's not tangible. Yeah. So I think that was something that was a big game changer for us in the generative AI component. And then, oh man, I was gonna say something about use cases and something else, and it kind of slipped my mind. But yeah, that was a piece of content, I think, in an area that when we started mapping out where people are in their journey, really helped. Oh, this is what I was going to say. We also realized that not only does this help our customers, it also helped internally from a sales and go to market perspective, because people were able, our sales team and our cloud advisors and our customer success managers are able to take those use cases and talk about them very specifically with current customers and with prospective customers, and actually have results from other customers who have implemented these. And it just, again, makes things more realistic.
I think one of my favorite content assets is the use case content, because of everything, like, it's a great for customer enablement and customer expansion of like, hey, by the way, like, did you know we have these other use cases? And like, it's such a good sales enablement piece. It's so good for just like general education. So I love the call out of like, you doubled and tripled down on use case content so you could make it real, especially I feel like in the generative AI space. I feel like we kind of have the same thing in the ABM space. People like talk about ABM in like this big fluffy way. And like, when you get down to actual practical use cases, it just makes it real. And they're like, oh, I get it. And I can actually go do something about it. I love it. Yeah. A couple of things that I really loved before we started recording, just talking through like measurement of success. Like, you guys really dug pretty detailed into all the different ways that you're going to measure success. So I'd love to kind of hear, like, how did you then lay out to your executive team and to the team in and of itself, like, these are the ways that we're going to measure success so that we can actually know if our program is working.
Yeah. Well, first it was more about just increased engagement. You know, we have all these contacts in our database and accounts that are known AWS users. And it's like, are we actually reaching them? Are they engaging with us? And when I say engaging, sure, we want them on the phone and we'd love to have meetings with them, but even take it one step before that and say, are they even reading our content? Are they opening our emails? Are they visiting our website? Are we adding value to them, to their lives in any way? So that was kind of a quick and easy thing to measure to at least see what kind of traction we were getting when we were first launching. From there, as it evolved, we obviously started looking at MQLs and conversions from a like prospect to, like, basically what we call MQL to SAL, which is basically, you know, somebody who is not actively speaking to us to someone who is and meeting with a cloud advisor. That was, you know, that's a big measurement for us. And then from there, obviously, opportunities generated, pipeline, and revenue. But even beyond that, we're also looking at accounts in particular. So account coverage. So are we reaching new people, or are we expanding our buying centers outside of the two people that we have in our database? Are we creating, you know, are new contacts coming to us from the same company? So basically, just the growth and the multi-threading of that particular account, as well as, I guess that also falls like more into visibility, but also like impressions and clicks and all the channel performance also that are playing into the overall campaign initiative are ways that we measure. So there's like the tactical KPIs that we use for the more short-term results, just to see that we're on the right track or if we need to make pivots quickly. And then the more long-term results, which is what's showing pipeline and revenue, ultimately ROI results from these initiatives. And that's how we can kind of make a case to investing in additional resources or technology or et cetera.
And again, I think this part is so important. Again, we were talking about this a little bit before we pressed record, but just like the purpose of building an ABM program and building a scrappy ABM program specifically is so you can prove out the model and then scale it. Like the goal is to win, to then reinvest. So I love the way that you just broke down. Like there are very specific KPIs that are both on the tactic level of like, are we seeing people actually engage? And then also, yes, like pipeline and revenue. And are we seeing people and actually convert from engagement to conversations? And one that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about on the show, but I think it's so important, is just like relationship expansion, specifically in the context of a lot of people are changing jobs right now. I feel like a lot of people have been changing jobs right now for the past decade. But all that to say, like it just... if you can make sure that you're not single threaded, like when the one person leaves, the other thing that happens often is like, especially in the summer, people go on vacation and like you lose your entire conversation because the one person you were talking to was like, oh, I'm going on a 2-week vacation, especially if they're in Europe. They go like, there's like August is just like a dead month, which is great, but also infuriating if you're in sales. But all that to say, like, I love those KPIs. And I'm just curious, as you think about the difference in who you report those KPIs to, like, did you have different dashboards for different audiences internally, or was it just like, we're all bought in, we can all look at the same dashboards?
So no, I have different dashboards for different people. So within my team, you know, we're looking much more tactical KPIs. So we're looking at channel performance. We're looking at, MQLs and how those MQLs are getting generated. Basically, are they coming inbound because they're raising their hand, requesting to talk to us through our website? Are they becoming MQLs through like lead scoring progress? So we're looking at it from that perspective. And then I also have this other dashboard that I do take some of that MQL data, but I shrink it much shorter. And then I layer on the ABM analytics. So like how many accounts we're actively reaching out to, how many meetings have been set, how many opportunities have been generated. And then obviously we also break out pipeline and revenue by inbound channels versus like those outbound channels, which is generally people that are getting sourced by our cloud advisors through this ABM strategy. So that secondary dashboard, my exec team has it. I also meet weekly with our private equity marketing advisor, and we go through some of that data too. And it's great. I actually saw a template through one of the marketing B2B marketing leadership communities that I'm in, and I thought it was just such a great visual that I essentially took a copy and replicated it for Mission Cloud, and it's been great because it breaks it out between like awareness and then the actual conversions and then more bottom of the funnel data.
Yeah, I generally don't like to report on like awareness outside of the marketing team because I've found, generally speaking, my executive teams have always been like, we don't care about impressions, like how many people are actually like having conversations. So I try to break those things out because obviously awareness is important. People can't buy from you if they don't know that you exist, but like just ensuring that you have the right dashboards for that audiences. Last couple of questions for you.
I will say for the awareness piece, for the outside of marketing, I don't include impression data because if somebody says how many impressions, impressions are great. They're important. They're a vanity metric. They are not an objective because you can't say, oh, if we get 1 million impressions, we'll get X amount of revenue. It doesn't work that way. It's, so it's more of, so instead I use, website data, like our own website information. So you, total visits and then homepage visits. And then I'll break it out by like unique versus like recurring.
Nice. I think that's a great breakdown. Last couple of questions. You already alluded a little bit to it around some of the roadblocks that you experienced. I'm just curious, are there any other roadblocks that you've experienced over the past 10 months as you've been building out this program?
Unfortunately, our integration, some of them are a little bit wonky. And so we have a lot of manual work that needs to happen in some cases when we're pushing contacts from, say, like one tool to another tool. Or trying to like map specific individuals back to an account so we can assign it to an individual, just because the data management is, or the data quality, I should say, is not always pristine. So like one account can have 20 contacts and 20 contacts can have 20 different owners. So just the management of all of that is quite frustrating sometimes because it's very manual and it's very time consuming. And so it puts a lot of extra work on the operations team that needs to do this in order for us to get things out to market quicker.
Yeah. I'm curious, are there any solves that you've identified on how to make that manual process a little bit more seamless?
We're considering looking at agencies to kind of help with some of the data management issues. Funny enough, the timing of this is great. I just found out that we have Zapier internally that we haven't been tapping into. So I think that could possibly be a very good solution.
Yeah.
So I think the other piece is, outside of the data management, everybody has their own personal priorities. And it's just making sure that everyone's aligned to make sure that we understand what real priorities are versus what just needs to happen in a timely manner. So again, it's opening the communications and projects and tasks and, bandwidth on everyone's plate.
Yeah. All right. Last question for you. The misalignment internally is literally the number one problem with building an ABM program. So it's something I think everybody has to figure out kind of how to solve internally. So I'm just curious, and it could be on that point, but is there any other general advice given separate from the program that you just walked through and how you orchestrated it? Just any general advice for how do you build ABM in the first place?
So this actually goes into alignment. Build it with your sales team. It's not just a marketing tactic. It's not a marketing function. Quite frankly, I'm personally not a fan of ABM terms because it makes it seem like only marketing does it and runs with it. And really it should be an account-based experience across all the entire organization and across go-to-market teams. So I would say build it with your sales team. Ask them for advice on what kind of accounts they have seen success with. Start with a lookalike model. You don't have to have the technology for that. You can use online sources or ask ChatGPT to pull you a list of 20 accounts that look like another, this company. You can start there, and that also gives them reason to feel invested, and therefore because they're contributing to the process itself and to the accounts. And as you continue to, I also would say that also with alignment is don't be afraid to over communicate. You're not, worst case scenario, somebody doesn't respond, but it's better to just have more information, give them more information than you kind of doing things behind the scenes and being like nobody knowing what you're actually up to. It's okay if the results don't look good right away. It's not going to be an overnight success. Actually, it's going to take a while. And explain metrics they're in layman's terms. Don't use marketing terminology. Don't use the jargon. That will just allow to have more open dialogue and conversations with people that will allow them to at least understand what you're trying to accomplish.
Couldn't agree more. The most successful programs we've helped clients build are when like the sales team is involved in the sales process and they're bought in from the beginning, because that means they're all actually on the same page around trying to figure this out. So I love it. Thank you so much for joining me. If you want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Dina Otero. I don't think there's too many of us out there.
I love it. Well, again, Dina, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.